is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
As we guide our players today through their process, what to look for in terms of college, and do you just want to go to a school because it's a big name? Do you just want to say you went Division I, or do you want to play in college and actually have a career? And those are things that kids and families don't necessarily consider. But thankfully, because of our experience, we're able to share those experiences with them.
Roshan Russell is the head boys basketball coach at St. Rita High School in Chicago, Illinois. Russell took over the head job at his alma mater after serving as an assistant coach for 5 seasons under the previous head coach, Gary DeCesar. Russell also has experience at the college level, having been an assistant coach at Division III Fontbonne University in St. Louis for 3 seasons. Roshan played his high school basketball at St. Rita's and then attended North Park University in Chicago, where he enjoyed an outstanding playing career for the Vikings. Hey Hoopheads, this October our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering $3,000 off their CT machine. Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Danny Young, the head boys coach at Shaker Heights High School, and you're listening to Hoopheads Podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Take some notes as you listen to this episode with Roshan Russell, boys basketball head coach at St. Rita's High School in Chicago, Illinois. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here tonight without my co-host, Jason Sunkel, but I am pleased to be joined by the head boys basketball coach at St. Rita High School in Chicago, Illinois, Roshan Russell. Roshan, welcome to the Hoopheads Pod.
Thank you for having me. Been looking forward to this. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Going to be fun to dive in, learn more about you, all the things that you've been able to do thus far in your coaching career. Let's start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell me a little bit about some of your first experiences of the game growing up in Chicago.
Well, I would say for me, probably started before I even knew what was going on. My parents always told me the only way to get me to stop crying is to give me a ball. So
nice. There you go.
It kind of started there, but actually, I have an older brother, Rashay Russell. He actually ended up playing Division I basketball, and you know, as a kid, you know, your older sibling, normally you want to copy what they do. So obviously, you know, he played basketball, and watching him, you know, I couldn't get enough of it. And obviously, the Chicago Bulls were the team to be. So you know, watching Michael Jordan, obviously, and the Bulls. That was obviously my favorite thing to do. Definitely love watching the team, and it was pretty cool, even though I didn't fully understand what was happening. But definitely was really cool whenever they were playing. I always watched the games, and the Harlem Globetrotters were popular then. I remember going to watch them. I remember after my friend and I got back home, I literally spent the entire night in the basement trying to twirl the ball on my finger. So eventually I actually got it. I got it the same night. So just kind of from the beginning, just was a basketball junkie from birth, really. So
that's cool, because the Globetrotters, kind of the heyday of the Globetrotters, predated you. You were not around. You're a little bit younger than me. So I was kind of around. I was a kid when the Globetrotters were kind of a really big thing. Used to be on ABC's Wide World of Sports on the weekend. They'd show them, you know, traveling and playing all over the world. And obviously at one point in their history, they had some of the best players in the world that played for the Globetrotters, Will Chamberlain among them. So it's kind of crazy thinking about the. I don't know if I've had anybody tell me that the Globetrotters had an influence on them. So that's a you're a one of one. Now lots of people have told me Jordan. Obviously Jordan gets a lot of throws a lot of inspiration out there to people. But you're the first one with the Trotters. I like that because you know kind of growing up in that era. Thinking about Metalark Lemon and Curly Neal and all the guys that made up the Globetrotters kind of when they were in their heyday. That's cool that was something that inspired you. When you think about your older brother and you being the younger brother, how much do you think that trying to keep up with him and just chase him made you into a better athlete, a better basketball player as you got older?
Well, it helped a lot. You know, I've always considered myself a student of the game. So, you know, I always enjoy watching basketball just generally, but let alone being able to watch my brother, you know, go through the process, whether it was, you know, grammar school, choosing us high school. You know, I used to always look forward to going to St. Rita basketball games to watch my brother. And really, you know, obviously the big brother, he's not going to take it easy on you, right? So, we'd have our battles and he never let me win, but ultimately, you know, it made me tougher. It made me want to work harder. So I'm forever thankful for having an older brother to look to who was really talented, who showed me how to work hard. And, you know, again, definitely got a lot of my competitive edge from him as well.
Was it always basketball in your guys' house or were there other sports involved too when you were younger?
So ironically, my father, he was a football guy, baseball. You know, I'm left-handed. So if it was his choice, I probably would have played baseball. But
you should have been a left-handed pitcher, right? That's where the money is.
You know, looking back at it, I should have. but no, I mean, once I started playing basketball and, you know, a combination of, you know, the Bulls, my brother, and, you know, I just fell in love with it. You know, I played small fry. Early on, you know, I was pretty talented as a kid. So once I started playing basketball, I just, you know, I was natural at other sports. So, you know, I would do it for fun, but I definitely didn't want to do anything else seriously other than basketball.
When you got up into the high school and you started taking the game even more seriously and you were trying to get better and improve, what did you do to work on your game as a high school player? What was your process? Were you playing a lot of pickup? Were you working on the game on the playground, in the gym by yourself? At the same time, when you're growing up, you don't have the proliferation of trainers that we have today. So just what was your process for getting better?
Yeah, well, I'll say actually the coach my brother played for and I ended up playing for 2 years during high school. And ironically, we actually work together now. His name is John Bunk and he's a Hall of Fame coach. And growing up, I used to go to his camps. And I feel like, honestly, that's missing today. While the game is certainly advanced and, you know, there's some great trainers out there for sure. Just in terms of breaking down the game and the fundamentals and, you know, doing the simple things. You know, I know there's a lot of times now I'll walk in a gym and I'll see a, you know, 12-year-old doing a step back. And, you know, but he doesn't know how to, you know, reverse pivot. Right. So. You know, I was very fortunate to learn from one of the best, you know, probably the best teacher of the game I've ever been around. So coming into high school, I was actually a 4-year varsity starter. So I got thrown in the fire right away. but I spent a lot of time with my coach. He definitely helped me out a ton in terms of sharpening my skills. And, you know, again, obviously, you know, having my brother who was playing Division I basketball. I know when he first went down to Toledo, which is where he ended up playing, I would go train with him and his teammates as well. So certainly helped a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Getting a chance to play against older, better players. I think that's one of the things that we've talked about it a lot here on the podcast. Just the fact that the way the system is set up today where kids spend a lot of time playing against other kids their own age. And so they're not going and pushing themselves playing against older kids. Where back in the day, you might have been on the playground and you might have been a high school player playing with college players or playing with adults, or you might have even been in grade school and trying to keep up with the high schoolers. And today, kids just don't get that same opportunity. I think they have more access to gyms, and in some cases, they have more access to better coaching. But I think as far as like those older players that kind of would take guys under their wing and watch out for them and show them the tricks of the trade, I think that's something that just isn't out there as much. And I'm sure you got that from your brother and some of the players that played with him that you got a chance to play against and compete with.
Yeah, I mean, just to continue that, I'll say I think that's a lost art. You know, unfortunately, with the world of social media and, you know, again, having access to everything right now, the patience has changed. So, you know, when I was coming up, you know, it was great to have someone older to look to learn from, someone to kind of push you around a little bit and wait your turn. Where nowadays, you know, the kids, the parents, you know, they want, you know, everything right now.
So yep, for sure.
Fortunately, the patience is not what it used to be.
Yeah, I think there's something that is different there in terms of, I think it used to be more where you were focused on kind of what you were doing in the moment. I think now the way that our youth basketball system is set up, it's kind of everybody's pushing for what's next. And so if I'm on a fifth grade AAU team, I'm thinking about, well, what middle school team, what AAU team am I going to play on when I'm in middle school? And what am I going to be a varsity starter when I'm a sophomore? And if I'm a varsity sophomore, where am I going to be going to school? And I think so often we get caught up in looking ahead to the next thing, and we sometimes forget to enjoy the moment where we are and just enjoy our experience as a high school basketball player. I've talked to so many people that have had varying degrees of success as players and as coaches, and when they look back, inevitably, I think most of them look back and say, man, my time as a high school basketball player, there really wasn't much better than that. It's almost like it was pure basketball because it just was – they just enjoyed it so much. And I think sometimes we get lost in that, especially today where kids are so focused on what's next that they forget to enjoy what's right there in front of them. So when you look back to your high school experience, do you have a memory or two that when you think high school basketball that stands out for you?
Yeah, I would say two. One is positive, one not so positive. So, my senior year, on my senior night, we played our rivals, Mount Carmel, and we had some pretty serious battles with them, just even from the summer, our summer league game. So we had that date marked, obviously, for senior night. But, you know, then again, it was Mount Carmel. So long story short, that night we ended up going into four overtimes. And I remember I wasn't even tired. I was just like, I'll play them all night, but I'm not losing them out, Carmel. So, you know, most of our starters fouled out. I was the one who lasted through, and you know, our team, we actually ended up pulling out the game. But what the memory that I remember the most about that game was two, really. You know, as each overtime went on, other people from other games were coming to ours. Like, the St. Rita Mount Carmel game still going on, so the gym just kept getting more packed. And that was pretty cool to see. And then once we won the game, my classmates, you know, they rushed the floor and really excited, and they carried me off the floor.
That's awesome.
Way to the hallway to a reporter. And that's just something that, you know, I'll never forget. You know, St. Rita's really a tight-knit community, truly a brotherhood. So I was really thankful for that. That's something that I'll always remember for the rest of my life. The second one would be my junior year in the playoffs. We were in a regional championship, and it was Derrick Rose's last home game at Simeon. And that did not work out so well for us. But
that's surprising, Roshan.
Yeah, what I will say, though, it was cool to be matched up against him and have that opportunity. You know, I'm a fearless competitor, and you always want to go against guys of that caliber. So to have that opportunity, definitely something I'll never forget. But again, the score did not work out in our favor, so that ended our season.
All right, so what's high school Derrick Rose feel like, look like on the floor?
So I'll be honest. So I play against a lot of great players. Jerome Randall. I can just go down the line of great players I played against. Patrick Beverly. Derrick Rose was the one player I was on the court with, and I was like, all right, he can score when he wants to. I can't score if I try. Even though, you know, I'm trying my hardest. You know, I'm not afraid. Yep. You know, I'm coming at him, but it was just one of those weird things. He was so strong. He was so fast. I remember there was a play in the game when it was actually competitive. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you kind of want your team like, hey, don't say anything. Don't make them mad. Let's just try to hang in there. And hopefully we have an opportunity to win the game. So one of my teammates, he had an opening. He goes for a dunk. He misses it, but it was like a good miss. And shortly after that, like two plays later, Derrick Rose finally makes his first serious move. And I'm at half court. He's coming at me. And by the time I react, he's at the free throw line. And then about a play later, I turn the ball over. Derrick Rose is coming on a break. It's a 2-on-1. Guy flips it back to Derrick Rose. Our center's waiting on him, and he just dunks all over him. And that was pretty much the ball game. So, I say it to say that being on the court with him was definitely different than any experience that, that I had, you know, experienced up to that point. And I even played against Derrick Rose when he was in sixth grade. And every time he was just a man amongst boys. So I'm always proud to say I played against him.
It's kind of amazing when you think about guys that obviously as a league MVP in the NBA, clearly completely different from most of what all of us have experienced as basketball players out on the floor. And those guys that reach that highest level, they just have, they have something both from a physical standpoint of things that they just are capable of doing that, you know, other people are not capable of doing. And then I think what people discount is just how good they are from a mental standpoint and a toughness standpoint. And, you know, there's lots of guys that have talent, but there's not a lot of guys who maximize that talent and get the most out of it. And I think when you look at a guy like Derrick Rose, you know, especially obviously pre-injury, but coming back and being able to do what he's done in his career since he got hurt, I mean, it would have been easy to pack it in and be like, man, I'm not the athletic marvel that I was before. And, you know, he obviously had to adjust his game to play differently. But when you look at pre-injury Derrick Rose and what he was capable of doing from a physical standpoint, but then also just the way he understood the game. And I think those guys are just on a different level, as you got to experience firsthand. And I experienced several times in my career playing against guys that played in the pros. Like, it's just, those guys are a breed apart.
they certainly are. And, you know, there wasn't a player, you know, growing up in our era, even my brother's era, that didn't want to be Derrick Rose. I mean, he, you know, he was a success story. You know, he was the chosen one. You know, he got to put on the hometown uniform, and couldn't be more excited for him. I mean, it almost in a weird way feels like a distant brother to a degree from just watching him grow up and going through the process. So I'm so happy that he's been able to recover and continue his career. And selfishly, I would love to see him retire in a Bulls uniform. So hopefully we can make that happen before he hangs it up. But definitely was really cool to grow up playing against him and watching him play.
Yeah, that was cool. I mean, it's one of those things where when a guy can have success in his hometown as a professional athlete, doesn't get much better than that. I know here in Cleveland, obviously, we got to experience our one and only championship of my lifetime with LeBron. So I'll forever be indebted to LeBron and the opportunity to sit and watch that championship was something that even as it was happening, I don't think I still couldn't really wrap my head around it. Like, wait, it's over and Cleveland won? Is that even possible? And so for LeBron to have done that and to have done it in his hometown, and again, if you think about a guy like Derrick Rose, or you think about LeBron probably to an even greater degree, where here's these guys that have, as you said, I'm sure Derrick Rose in Chicago was a celebrity from the time he was in sixth, seventh grade. And yet, you know, you think about how some people handle that fame, right? And fame gets to them and they don't make it for whatever reason. They end up making a series of choices that doesn't allow them to maximize and fulfill their potential. And you look at Rose, and obviously, unfortunately, had the knee injury, but man, a guy who made it. And LeBron, same thing. Like, it's hard to imagine that with all the notoriety and publicity those guys have had, that they've been able to go through and do the things that they've done and be as successful and be just the role models that they've been for people in both communities, whether you think about Chicago or Cleveland. It's just, to me, it's incredible that somebody can handle that at such a young age and still make it to the highest levels of their profession is pretty incredible.
No, I couldn't agree more. And actually, fun fact, my brother, he's same year as LeBron, and he actually played against him. But when he played against him, LeBron was like maybe 6'1", 6'2", at the time.
Okay.
And then I remember seeing LeBron years later as a senior, and he was a full-grown man and 6'8", at that time.
It's crazy.
Yeah, but to your point, I mean, you know, one thing I'll echo about Derrick Rose and LeBron James is obviously, I mean, he's been incredible, definitely my favorite player, is the humility part. You know, Derrick Rose never, you know, displayed arrogance, you know, I always speak to you, I'm humble on the court. Now, if you said something to him, you know, that was probably different, but that's natural, right? But definitely a guy full of humility, and it's been really fun to watch LeBron James, not only what he's doing on the court, but off the court. I think that's so important, and he's hopefully, you know, these guys coming up will model what he's been able to do.
Yeah, I think when you look at where the league is today and you compare it to what the league was like in the late 70s, early 80s, where you just didn't have those role models and guys were getting into drugs and there was lots of things going on that probably weren't the best for players' careers and for the league in itself. And now you look at these young guys coming to the league and clearly they're coming in way younger than they ever have. And yet at the same time, they come in way more polished simply because they've been talked to, they've been educated, they've educated themselves, and they've been media sensations in a lot of ways since they were younger. So they've had to kind of figure it out and understand how to, you know, how to handle those things. And if you get good people around you, I think that bodes well for what ultimately is going to be your success. Let's talk a little bit about your decision to go and play college basketball and maybe how it relates to the experience that your brother had being recruited and being a college basketball player. So maybe just talk a little bit about how, what your brother went through from the standpoint of being recruited and eventually going to play Division I basketball and how that impacted maybe your thought process as a high school player and then how you ended up making the decision to go to North Park and play there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So my brother, you know, he got the good genetics. So he was 6 feet, much bigger than I am. He played with two other teammates who went on to play Division I basketball, Jarrah Young and Mike Rembert, two guys that are, you know, 6'8" piece. So, you know, definitely have one of the best teams in the state. So, again, their games are always packed and exciting to watch. And my brother actually, he was offered the first scholarship between them. And really the coaches are coming out, obviously, to see those guys. And obviously those guys were great and had stellar careers. And it was kind of a surprise, I think, to my father because, you know, basketball was fairly new to him. And I don't think he was even thinking scholarship where parents today, right? They're like, they want it when they're freshmen.
Right, exactly.
So it was a really exciting time for our family and my father. You know, all he could think about was, hey, we don't have to pay for college. You're committing now. So my brother, you know, he committed shortly after. I remember going on a visit with him, and it was just a really cool experience. And at the time, you know, I had a quick growth spurt that did not continue when I got into high school.
you thought you were going to catch him, huh?
Yeah, I thought so. Everybody thought so. So, I mean, if you talk about just skill, you know, I was probably more skilled. You know, there's a lot of people, you know, especially my father was like, oh, well, you know, big brother got a scholarship. Well, we know you're getting one. And this is why I think we're so great together now as coaches, was because we were able to see, you know, how this can work out for you. So, you know, fast forward. You know, I get into high school. I'm a four-year varsity starter. I have a really good career. You know, I'm all area, all conference. I average 19 points a game as a senior. However, my recruitment was really slow. You know, I had some opportunities. Had some Division I's looking at me. Had some Division II's. Seems like every school that was talking to me, their staffs got let go by the end of my senior year. So actually what ended up happening was there was a teammate of mine, Emmanuel Crosby, who I actually coach with now. He's on our varsity staff. And he wanted to continue his career. He's like, hey, you know, I'm going to go to North Park. And at the time, to be honest, I had never heard of North Park. I was like, what is North Park? And so anyway, I ended up talking to the assistant coach, Steve Schaefer. They were surprised I was still available. And when I went on campus, it just felt like home. You know, I played with the team. The competition was much better than I thought. And I was not interested in prep school or junior college, you know, I had a lot of those, you know, reaching out to me like, hey, if you come here, you'll definitely get a scholarship. You're good enough. You know, just probably just need to put on weight, whatever the case may be. And I'm like, you know what? I don't need another senior year. I want to go get my degree. I think I found a place that I can go be successful at, have an opportunity to play early and be a big fish in a small pond. And that's pretty much what happened. So having my brother go through his experience and just kind of telling me like, hey, Division I isn't everything you think it is. If you have an opportunity to go somewhere and play, you should do it. So it really helps us now as we guide our players today through their process. What to look for in terms of college, and you know, do you just want to go to a school because it's a big name? Do you just want to say you went Division I, or do you want to play in college and actually have a career? And those are, you know, things that, you know, kids and families don't necessarily consider. But thankfully, because of our experience, we're able to share those experiences with them.
Yeah, no, that's great that with both of you guys being resources and having gone through the experiences that you did, I'm sure that's invaluable when you're talking to your players. What's something your brother shared about Division I basketball that he was like, man, this wasn't necessarily what I thought? Do you remember anything specific that he said that sort of stands out?
Well, two things, although one is kind of similar to really college level, but
right.
It doesn't matter. But I think the first one was, I know when he first got down there, I remember he called my father. He was like, hey, I don't know if I could do this. Just from the early morning workouts, you know, how intense it was, you know, they kind of own you at that level. So, you know, that was definitely an adjustment for him, and really just the business side of it. You know, like you go into college, and it's like, hey, you're the point guard. You're going to pass that guy the ball. You're going to defend this guard full court. And if you don't want to do it, you can sit down next to me. We don't care. It's very cutthroat. He was very, you know, clear about that. And, you know, from going to where I went to school, and again, very competitive, you know, I don't think kids today understand how competitive college basketball is, period. Whether it's Division I, II, III, NAI, if you're playing in college, you're.
Absolutely. I think that's a huge piece that people, I don't think, really understand. It's a big misunderstanding that's out there with people, and you can kind of understand it. But, you know, I mean, it's funny because, you know, you're talking about Division III basketball. We've had so many Division III coaches on that we've talked about when they're recruiting kids, and they'll be like, hey, have you even seen a Division III game? And most of the kids they're talking to are like, no, you know. And so it's like, you know, people look at it and they're like, Division III. And most people have no idea how good you have to be to play at that level.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up. So I won't name the player, but a few years ago, actually, I had a player and he was like, you know, I want to play Division I. And I'm like, do you know how hard it is to play Division I? And I said, you know what? I said, let's do something. Let's go to a Division III basketball game. And so it was a high-level game. I believe it was North Central versus Elmhurst, two teams that are always nationally ranked, teams that beat Division I schools in exhibition games every year. And so we go watch the game, and you know, it's very competitive. Even I'm looking like, how did I play out?
Right. Yeah. I've been to games like that now where I'm like, man, holy cow.
Right. So I'm looking like, I actually played out there. I did well. So midway, you know, I think about halftime, I started talking. I said, hey, you know, do you think you can play out there right now? He said, honestly, coach, no. And I said, what about, you know, I named a few guys on our team. He was like, no, I mean, we might have one. And I think it was just such an eye-opening experience. And, you know, I wish that smaller colleges were taken more seriously and was able to maybe cast a bigger net because, you know, again, like I tell players all the time, no one trains all their life and make all the sacrifices to not play Division I. I get it. There is truly value in playing small college basketball, and it's extremely competitive. And in a lot of cases, it can be, you know, the best time of your life opposed to being a walk-on at a Division I or being there and not playing at all. So, you know, I think, you know, kids and families now need to think more thoroughly about, you know, what they really want out of this. Now, the free tuition part, I get.
Right,
and
for that, sure.
And that's the goal. But from a pure basketball standpoint, it's definitely sad to me that a lot of kids today don't understand the value of small colleges.
I'm trying to find the right fit, whether that's the right fit, first of all, with the school and the academic piece of it. And then you start talking about the fit with the coaching staff. And then, like you mentioned in your own situation, you're looking at it and you're going, hey, am I going to have a chance to play and actually get out on the floor? Because I think people, it's another thing that I think they underestimate when you start talking about college basketball is anybody who's coming into a college team is going to have been a really good player at their high school and probably had the ball in their hands a lot, and probably got to do a lot and been a big fish. And now you go to college and suddenly you don't have that same role, or maybe you don't have any role at all. And college practices compared to high school practices, it's a lot different, as you know. And I think sometimes people romanticize what any level of college basketball is, but certainly romanticize what Division I basketball is all about. I know that probably the most difficult year I spent in my life was as a freshman. And I played maybe, I don't know, between 4 and 6 minutes a game and went through the grind of practice every single day. And man, you know, it's one thing if you're going to play 35 minutes on Saturday or Wednesday night, but when you're not playing those minutes and you're still going through the grind of practice every day, that's tough. And it's, you got to manufacture your own fun sometimes. And I think people underestimate what it takes actually to play at any level.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, just the opportunity to really, you know, build community. And, you know, I was an RA in college and just things that I probably would never been able to do if I, you know, did try to play at a higher level. So certainly understand what you're saying for sure.
When you're in college, what are you thinking about in terms of career? Is coaching on your radar at that point?
So actually, in high school, there was a friend of mine, Anthony Rappold. We played together and we had always talked about coaching together. And in college, I remember might have been on Facebook, even though I wasn't even a social media person. I was like the last person to get started. But I remember we connected and, you know, we kind of talked about, man, like, wouldn't it be cool if we can coach together? So, you know, as my college years went on, you know, to be honest, you know, somewhere along the lines, not that it got lost, but I just didn't know how to go about it. You know, I was the guy on the team that knew everything on the scouting report, you know, from the first guy to the last guy. Sometimes I whispered to one of my teammates so we don't get in trouble when we're getting quizzed. I knew exactly what the game plan was and knew, you know, defensively, all right, this is what they're giving up. You know, if I'm driving on the strong side, I'm looking opposite because they're helping two passes away. I was just always, you know, just a student of the game. So actually, when I graduated, my assistant coach, who was only there for my first year, Steve Schaefer, and he knows I was mad at him because he left, and he was a big reason why I came. But, you know, as you get older, you start to understand, you know, everyone has to make decisions for their family.
Right.
And I remember when I graduated, I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I was working at a hotel, actually, as a pool attendant for the summer, just, you know, just trying to figure out what I wanted to do. So, you know, I just wanted to make some money at the time. And Steve Schaefer, he called me, I want to say, like, mid-July. And he's like, hey, you're moving to St. Louis. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm coming tomorrow. And I didn't know what he was talking about. And he was like, hey, I just got the I'm a head college coach at Fontbonne University, a small school in St. Louis. I need someone here that I trust. I also need a full-time guy. So he said, you know, you would get a full-time student and a full-time coach. And at the time, I didn't know what that meant. So for anyone listening, I would say part-time, don't do the full-time thing. But obviously, I mean, it was something I could not say no to. It definitely was too great of an opportunity. I mean, I'm the first person in my family to pursue a master's and actually get a master's. I hadn't even thought about grad school, but having the opportunity to coach at that level, I'm forever thankful for Steve Schaefer for the opportunity that he gave me. And that's one message I always pass along to my players is treat everyone with respect. You don't know, you know, when, you know, that person might come in your life and be able to help you. And I had no idea that, you know, my coach, my freshman year, just staying in touch with them, you know, just being a person that, you know, that I always try to be, my parents wanted me to be. And clearly he saw something in me to give me that opportunity. So I was very fortunate.
What do you remember about stepping into that coaching world for the first time? Was there things that surprised you about it that, oh man, I didn't know that coaches spent so much time doing this or doing that? Did you take to it immediately? Just what do you remember about your initial thoughts?
Well, my initial thought, honestly, was a couple of things. I had a serious girlfriend at the time.
That never helps when you're moving away.
No, but thankfully she was supportive. She said there's no way I can turn it down. So obviously, I go. The other part was, you know, the age. You know, I was fresh out. I was 22. So, you know, when I got there, you know, these guys are like my age. So my initial question was, you know, how can I find a balance of, you know, obviously, you know, there's a luxury to having a coach on your staff that can maybe be more relatable, be someone that those guys can confide in, but also draw the line and say, hey, I'm still coach. So that was something that, you know, I was concerned about for sure. And then, you know, as I got down there, that actually went a lot better than I anticipated. I didn't realize just how big of a difference a few years can make, even just in terms of society. And, you know, I know social media really started to grow around that time. And again, I was definitely more old school. So there was definitely some maturity gap there, which worked in my favor. And then just the hours, I mean, they're insane. I mean, you know, you're talking, sometimes I'm working out guys at 10:30 at night, you know, coach wanted me up at 6 a.m. if I had to, you know, a punishment run or a workout. So, you know, I'm really doing, you know, I'm like, well, when am I supposed to do my work, coach?
Right.
And, you know, I'm doing, you know, my coursework between, you know, literally 12 and 4. You know, those are the hours. So, you know, I was living off Red Bulls at the time. So, but, you know, it taught me how to grind, you know, taught me how to, you know, work hard, make no excuses. And it definitely helped me grow up really fast. So,
what's something that you take from that experience with Coach Schaefer that you think is still part of who you are as a coach today?
I would say two things, and one I'm still not good at, but I try my best. His organization was off the charts. You know, I thought, you know, the way he organized every aspect, whether it was his practice, game planning, the way he recruited, everything he did was extremely organized, and that's something I've certainly tried to take with me. I don't even compare to his organization. I still don't know how he does it, but I like to think that I stole a few tricks from him, and really just the, you know, his passion. You know, if you have passion for anything, you're going to give, you know, 110%. And he always did. I mean, he's got a different battery, and I think he passed that battery on to me, that I'm around the clock. Whenever my players need me, parents, you know, obviously, you know, a lot of my guys are getting recruited heavily. So college coaches, they don't care what time they contact you.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, I'm always on. And, you know, some might say, well, that doesn't sound too healthy. But if you want to be great at this, it's kind of how it has to be. So,
yeah, there's no question about that. I think that when you look at the baseline amount of time that you have to put in just to be average – is probably way more time than the average person, especially the average parent or the average high school player, thinks about what you're doing. And then you talk about if you want to really excel and be the best, the amount of time that you got to put in is crazy. When you think back to your time as a college coach, did you have an idea that you would eventually end up back at your alma mater coaching at the high school level? Did you think, I want to continue to work my way through and up the ladder in college basketball? What was your thought process after you had been there at Fontbonne for a year or two in terms of where you sort of thought your career might head?
Okay, so I'll go back. So after I finished my master's degree, Steve Schaefer took a better opportunity in Arizona. So during that time, our players were going crazy. And they're like, if you leave, I'm leaving. And so we basically built that program from the ground up. So, you know, those first 2 years, you know, we took our lumps, but we brought in a great recruiting class. Love those guys. I've actually been to their weddings, still keep in contact. Certainly a special group. And I remember they were like, hey, you know, we want you to interview for the job. And I'm like, guys, I just finished. I'm not getting this job. So anyway, the administration, you know, and I'm always thankful for the administration. They saw, you know, some of my value, and I certainly appreciated that. So they offered me a contract that third year to stay on. And basically, I made the decision on the spot before I even talked to my family, because I got pulled into a conference room with the entire team. And of course, you know, young men, you know,
pressure of the moment right there.
Exactly. I'll never forget it. You know, young men, you know, we can be impulsive sometimes. So they're all like, coach, you know, if you're staying, we're staying. But if you can't tell us, we're going to look at other places. And I just remember looking at all them in that room, and I just, there was no way I could say no. I knew we had more to accomplish. So I stayed on for that third year. We actually made it to the conference tournament championship. And we were a game out of the national tournament. And it was so cool just to see where we started to where we were able to get to. Around that time, my niece was recently born, and it was bothering me being away from my niece. And so in terms of, to answer your question, in terms of coaching, to be honest, I really didn't know what was next. But I knew I wanted to get home, because I really wanted to be close to my niece. That was something that was really important to me. For some reason, her and I kind of clicked right away, and it was weird, but a very, very cool, thing between my niece and I. Even she's at a very early age. She's like, uncle, you know, come home. So
that's cool.
So anyway, after that year, I knew I was coming home, but I was coming home. I had no idea, what I was going to do. And, there was an opening at St. Rita, and the head coach at the time, who I did not play for. You know, I had been back a few times. My brother had helped out the staff, and he was like, hey, you know, I think you should interview for this position. And I'm like, I guess. Yeah. So sure. You know, it was an admissions job. So I interview and I get the job. So, you know, it's kind of like anything. Once you get your foot in the door, you know, you let the work from there speak for itself. So from there, I was a head sophomore coach. From there, I was the athletic director. Then I became the head varsity basketball coach and athletic director. Then I realized I don't want to worry about 15 other sports while I'm coaching. So I gave that up. So now I'm back in admissions, and I'm the head varsity basketball coach. So just blessed, honestly, just kind of right place, right time.
All right. So let's, before we dive into what you've been able to do at St. Rita and get into some of the specifics of your program, just tell me a little bit about similarities, differences between college and high school. Maybe likes, dislikes about each level. Just give me an idea of the comparison between the two.
Well, let me first by saying I love all my parents. but what I'll say is what I do miss about college, and even though today, from, you know, speaking with college coaches, is the landscape has changed. Parents are involved now in college,
yep.
Which
yep.
is very interesting. But when I coached in college, we did not really talk to parents, and that was a beautiful thing. it was really just focused on, you know, continuing to make them men. And, you know, if you have an issue, you know, come talk to me. You know, we're going to hold you accountable. But this is about you taking ownership of your career. So we did not talk to parents. And that was much better than high school, because it's very different for high school. But I'll say, honestly, what I do miss the most, if there's anything to miss, I would say, is the access to players. You know, now, you know, you kind of depend on rides. There's, you know, the gym is, you know, not, it's only open to a certain time, where, you know, in college, I mean, you kind of have it around the clock. And, you know, if I'm wired, or, you know, there's a kid I want to get my hands on, I could shoot him a text, say, hey, let's get in the gym tonight at 10 p.m. when you get out of class. And they have to say yes. Right.
Right.
Where now, you know, just with the schedule and the commute, you know, it's a lot tougher to do those things. And even just in terms of the rules, you know, like right now, I can't coach my kids. You know, you can, you know, have open gyms, and, you know, and whoever comes, and, you know, in colleges come out and watch them. But, you know, it's really difficult as a coach to, you know, see things and not be able to have the opportunity to correct it. Where in college, you know, the season starts sooner, you can work them out. So definitely just that hands-on approach of kind of having them around the clock. That's definitely a big difference from college to high school.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt that with the high school kids, there's a lot of things that go into it. You mentioned kids getting rides. You talk about just, again, having to go to school right all day. And that's a piece of it that, you know, as a high school coach, that you're trying to help those kids navigate and grow up not just as athletes, but grow up as students as well. And you guys, as a Catholic school, how far is the furthest commute for one of your players right now?
About an hour. Yeah, it's and that's what's unique about, you know, St. Rita right now. So we have buses that pretty much go everywhere, and it's crucial for our enrollment. So with that, it's very different than when I was a student, where, you know, we have, you know, students just generally that come from literally all over, and they make the sacrifices. They get up in the morning, they pass up 20 plus schools just to come to St. Rita. But, you know, again, you know, I'm biased, obviously, but St. Rita truly is a special place. And I know those guys, while some days might be tough and they're tired, I know they don't regret it, and they're 100% behind their decision. So.
Tell me about the benefits of being the coach at your alma mater. What are some things that makes that special for you?
Well, one thing about me, just as a person, I do feel like I always embrace the culture where I'm at, and I embrace the rivalry. So when I was at North Park, I knew who our rival was. I couldn't stand their colors, nothing, you know, everything about
it. Right, I get it.
When I was at Fombaugh University, same thing. They told me, okay, you don't like this university. Okay, I'm in. I don't like them. But it's something that's just special about the place that helped you grow up. And the jersey that you wore and put on, and have the opportunity to teach, you know, these young men the tradition and those who came before them. And I, there's so much pride in that, you know, watching my brother go through it first, then me, and us having the opportunity to do it together. It's so special. And the passion that I coach from, you know, I don't believe I could really match that anywhere else. You know, obviously you're going to put your best foot forward, and, you know, you're going to put, you know, everything you have in it, but there's kind of coach from a different place when you're at your alma mater. And I certainly do.
Yeah. It feels like it's a part of you, right? There's that chunk of your heart that you left there when you graduated initially, and you think about growing up there and all the time and sweat and effort and that you put into it as a student, as a player. And then you get to come back and to be able to talk to kids who are in the same place that you were years earlier. To me, I think that has to be a really special piece of it.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the portfolio guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your coaching portfolio guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more. When you first get the job, obviously you had been there as an assistant coach, and so you had seen what the previous coach had done and how he had done things. And you, as you're going through and your experience, I'm sure you had things that you're like, I like some of this. Here's some things that I might do differently. What do you remember about that first day on the job, that first week on the job as the head coach? What were some of the things that you were thinking that you wanted to do to take the program to an even higher level?
Well, actually, you know, during that time, it was a difficult transition. You know, it wasn't smooth by any means. But, you know, from day one, you know, I knew I wanted to, you know, focus on the kids that were there and put my best foot forward. So I remember my brother and I, we sat down together and he just said, "Hey, what do you want to do? Like, what is your goal?" And I said, "I want a national program. I want a team that can compete at the highest level. I want St. Rita basketball to go to a level that it's never been before." And, you know, every now and then as a coach, you're fortunate enough to have someone on your staff that's crazy enough to believe something like that. And that happens to be my older brother. And from that moment forward, we really didn't talk about it, to be honest. We just started to work. And we just work nonstop. And to be where we are 4 years later, with one of those years being a COVID year, to being 23 in the country, I can't tell you how humbling it is. And while every day it's like you're always on the go, you're always trying to figure out the next thing or figure out this issue or plan for this tournament or, you know, whatever it is, you know, the day brings, I have tried my best to take a step back sometimes and just appreciate where we started and where we are now, even though it's hard to do that sometimes. But it's very humbling to be where we are.
I think that's really well said. When you think about sort of the day-to-day minutiae that coaches deal with and you're trying to figure out, how do I get ready for this next game? How do I prepare for this next opponent? How do I write the next practice plan? That sometimes we get caught up so much in that day-to-day that we forget to step back and, as you said, see that bigger picture of, man, here's where we were 4 years ago and, wow, here's where we are now and what are the steps that we had to take in order to get there. And it's obviously all a process. When you sat and you said, hey, we want this to be a national program, what are some steps that you had to take along the way to make that a reality?
Yeah, well, the first one was I had to prove myself. So we had to win.
There you go.
And actually, you know, in year one, we actually broke the school record for a first-year staff with the most wins. And we actually won our division in our conference. There was a Thanksgiving tournament we had been in for the past, I think, 4 years. And that was the first time we actually won it. So we won the Thanksgiving tournament right off. You know, got to a regional championship, played, you know, Whitney Young, which obviously is, you know, their tradition speaks for itself. And we actually were up at halftime. Our game plan's working. I mean, we, you know, we take them as far as we can until, you know, DJ Stewart, who was on his way to Duke, and they had another guy, I can't think of his name, he's going to Georgetown, among other Division I players. You know, eventually talent just takes over. Nonetheless, it was a very competitive game. And I think just being, you know, where I was, you know, I was, you know, I'm the first African-American coach at St. Rita. So St. Rita being a Catholic high school and people seeing that, seeing me at my age, I think, you know, a lot of people were attracted to that. Like, who is this guy? Let me find out about what he's doing. On top of that, my brother, you know, his undergrad is marketing, and he might be a marketing genius. I don't like to compliment him, but he might be. And, you know, he was real big on like, hey, we got to market our program. You know, we got to use social media. You know, we got to get people attracted to, you know, who we are and what we're doing. And then just working for St. Rita, you know, the school sells itself. You know, unfortunately in Chicago, you know, there are not a lot of strong options in Chicago when you factor in safety, education, sports, you know, a place where, you know, going to be held accountable. To be, you know, at St. Rita, you know, again, being a coach of color, you know, having success early on and then have an opportunity to come in, you know, and play right away, I think was very intriguing. For those that were looking at, you know, St. Rita High School in our program.
On the floor, what are some things that you felt like you had to bring to the program from a coaching standpoint? Again, you mentioned about proving yourself. What did that look like day in, day out on the basketball floor with your guys?
Well, really, you know, again, I was very fortunate, you know, from, you know, where do I start? I mean, again, John Bunk, you know, a guy that really taught me how to play basketball, how to think the game. He's extraordinary. There's a reason why he's in the Hall of Fame. From my next 2 years of high school, Rob Sarmiento, who was a West Coast guy who, wanted to play in transition, and he was really big on relationships. And that's really where I start to understand, okay, if you want guys to play for you, relationships has to be number one. Moving on to, and every experience is different. So there's some coaches I learned what not to do. And sometimes that's the most valuable lesson you can have. From being an athletic director, where I was able to study some of our great coaches that we had, our football coach, Hall of Famer, state champion, our baseball coach, nationally ranked program at one point. So I had a lot of people to steal from. and basically you just try to make it into your own. So for me, I think it was just my guy seeing my passion every day, being prepared every day, and being a player's coach. That's something I pride myself on. Definitely teaching the game, but also letting them know, hey, I'm gonna instill confidence in you. I want you to be you within what we're trying to do. And those guys bought into it, and they had fun while I pushed them, and our staff pushed them really hard. It's always important to make sure that they're having fun, and I think a lot of those guys would say we accomplished that.
How do you balance that? I know that's something that coaches sometimes struggle with, right? We talk about the game should be fun, and yet at the same time, we talk about the need for making sure that we hold players accountable and that there's discipline in the program. And I think when you're straddling that line, we just talked to Mike Taylor. I talked to him. His episode is going up. Actually, I think it's going up tonight. It probably went out like an hour ago. And Mike said that his philosophy was, and I had never heard it expressed this way, but very simple, was fun with discipline. And I think when you start talking about, as a player, what kind of program would you like to play in, if you're somebody who likes to win and likes to be coached and wants to get better, to me, that atmosphere of fun with discipline, it just, that resonated with me when he said that. So when you think about the environment, the experience that you're creating for your players, what does that fun piece look like in your mind to go along with all the things that you have to do in order to win games on the floor?
Yeah, I think it starts with the relationships, right? So, there's times where I might call a player in my office, or maybe we're talking as a team and we're not even talking about basketball. Maybe I see in practice, all right, they're going through the motions today. They clearly don't want to be here. So let me, tie up my shoes and pray I don't tear anything. I'm fortunate to have not super young, but a young enough staff where we can still get out there and play a little bit. And it's amazing how the level of competition just rises, because, they want to beat coach. If I'm coming through the lane, I'm getting elbowed. Which is great. It's fun. And, I encourage them to do that. Maybe when we're doing some skill work, I'll turn on some music, just to get the juices flowing and, get them in good spirits. So, you have to be creative. Sometimes, when they think you're going to practice, maybe instead of practice, we're going to do a team bonding session. Maybe we just need it because there's a lot happening. So I think it's just important to stay creative and understand, what's needed at times. So I feel like, as a coach, you can get caught up into, we got to fix this, we got to fix that, we really need to practice, to not understand that maybe these kids just need a break. And, obviously there's a fine line with that on, no, they don't, you need to push them. But I think you got to find a balance with that. And, I'm fortunate that, I have, my brother and coaches around me that I trust, and, I listen to them. I would not be where I'm at without those guys. So, there might be times they see something I don't see, and, I'll definitely listen to them.
That's the magic in coaching, right? Is being able to understand and have a feel for your team and what they need at a given moment. And sometimes they need to be pushed, and sometimes they might need you to back off or take a step back and do a team bonding activity or do something fun that is maybe a little bit different than what might've been done 30 or 40 years ago, where it's just, hey, we got to keep grinding through. And now I think coaches have a better understanding of, hey, what is it that our players need? You look at it from the top down, right? We started off the episode kind of talking about Derrick Rose and LeBron and the NBA, and you think about how they've shifted and how important it is for guys to get rest, and the whole load management thing, where it used to be you just kind of ground players into the ground through the season, and no, they don't need a day off, and no, it doesn't matter if we practice for 3 hours a day before a game. Like, it's just, we gotta keep preparing. And now I think people have a much better understanding of what it takes to ultimately get your players to perform at their best on game night. And for every team, and I'm probably for every player, that looks different. And coaches all figure out ways that they can best do what suits their team so that they can get the best performance out of them. And I think that's really that's the magic, you know, that's the art of coaching. You know, it's not like, sure, there are some tried and true things that, you know, coaches do, but for the most part, it's not a science as much as it is an art, and having a feel for your team and knowing what it is that you need to do. When you think about growing as a coach and learning and the people that you go to, and obviously you have your staff and you have your brother, when you think about people outside maybe of your staff or reading or going to clinics or doing video, what's your go-to method or go-to source for trying to learn and become a better coach?
I don't know if I have a go-to source. I'm just a basketball junkie. So, you know, I'm always looking up drills. If I ever have an opportunity to, you know, go to a college practice, I'm definitely going, or a clinic. What I will say is that if I ever find myself in a situation where I'm like, and I need to change up practice, or can't figure out, you know, maybe I'm not communicating to my team the right way, that's where I really lean on my mentor, Steve Schaefer. So he's kind of the secret ingredient for me. You know, I'll give him a call and ask him for a suggestion. And, you know, he knows me, and we have a trust that, you know, I can't even explain. So I would say he's definitely a guy that I lean on. And just being fortunate enough to have the players that I have, I've been able to build relationships with, genuine relationships with a lot of college coaches. So sometimes, you know, I'll just call one of them and pick their brain. And, you know, they're always resourceful and very helpful. And as weird as this may sound, you know, sometimes just taking a step back too. You know, I spend so much time watching film over and over. You know, I can't even watch an NBA game without, you know, oh, look how they got Steph Curry open, or look at the right balance play. I need a paper. I need to rewind that to draw it up. So I can't even watch a game in a normal sense, like I guess some people do. But, you know, nonetheless, I think sometimes it's important to just, you know, maybe take a step back, get your mind off of it, you know, kind of reset. And, you know, sometimes, you know, the answer's right in front of you. You don't realize it. You just need to take a step away.
It's a great point. I think as a coach, it's sometimes difficult to turn off that coaching mindset. So you're sitting there and you're watching and you're scribbling, you're diagramming, you're looking at it going, hey, how'd that happen? And hey, what could we do to incorporate that in there? And I think the ability to bounce ideas off of a mentor or a group of mentors is a great resource for coaches. And it's great that you have Coach Schaefer to be able to do that, so that you can call him up and be like, hey, here's the situation. Because I think sometimes we think that the situation that we're facing is something that has never happened in the history of coaching, and we get sort of stuck on our own island. And then we talk to other people, we're like, oh yeah, lots of other people have experienced something similar. And if you can learn from others, I think that really helps you to grow and improve as a coach, which as you know, is something that's really, really important. And you talked a little bit here about the relationships with your players, and talking about a relationship with a mentor. And I know earlier you spoke about parents and how involved they are in their players' careers at this point. And certainly it's always been that way, I think, at the high school level, slowly creeping up. And when you think about the amount of time that parents spend from the time kids are, you know, in third grade, and they're traveling to tournaments, and they're staying in hotels, and they're going here, and they're paying for a trainer, and the amount of money that they have invested in the kid, it's no surprise that parents are really, really involved in their kids' careers. So when you think about the parents that are part of your program, I think one of the most important things is, how do you get them to buy into your program and to be supportive parents rather than the type of parents that are in the stands grumbling about this or that. So just what are some things that you do to engage the parents of your program to make sure that they stay on the right, on the right pathway and are supportive of what you're trying to do?
No, absolutely. So I definitely, I'm in open communication with my parents, and honestly, they really have been great to me. And I think a large part of it is, it may sound very simple, but it just comes down to the work and the hours that we put in, whether it's supporting them in their AAU tournaments, whether it's watching them at a showcase, in terms of recruiting, being at the front line of that process. I really think that's just built over time. Unfortunately, early on, some parents might, feel like they need to be hands on or they're afraid to let their baby go. But over time, once they see, like, these guys, they're holding my son accountable, they're getting him better, they have his best interests at heart. We're doing things outside of our job description.
Right. Absolutely.
In terms of just, time and commitment. And, I'm trying to do better. If a family, needs me, regardless of the time, I'm normally there for them. My players know they can contact me in the middle of the night if they need me, and they know I'm going to answer my phone, or if they need something, they know I'll do it. And if I can't, they know I absolutely can't. maybe I really have something going on. But I think once you, show that you're going above and beyond, parents normally will settle in. My philosophy is under promise, over deliver. And while I don't like talking about myself or patting myself on the back, I do believe that if anyone sat down with my parents, I do believe that is how they would describe what my staff and I have been able to do.
I love that when you talk about doing more than what's required, more than what's in your job description. I think that goes a long way towards demonstrating the commitment that you have to your players and to their families and to their ultimate success. Because, as I said, the amount of time that is the baseline for even being competitive in high school basketball today is, I think, higher than it's ever been. And I don't think that the average high school parent, the average high school player understands how much time you as a head coach and other head coaches like yourself put in order to make that happen. And when they do see it, and they do see the amount of time, and they do see you showing up for recruiting, and they do see you opening up the gym, and they do see you meeting players at odd hours to be able to work with them, and all the things that you do that just are beyond what the average person or the average coach might do, I think that goes a long way to getting people on board. It's hard to argue with somebody who is constantly available that, oh man, this guy, it's clear that he has the best interest of his student athletes at heart. And that's really, I think, critical. You mentioned being at the forefront of your players' recruitment, and obviously you've had quite a few players in recent years that had an opportunity to go on and play college basketball. So just talk about how you view your role as a high school coach in their recruitment. Just walk us through what that process is like and what you think is important for you to provide as a high school coach to your players as they're going through the college recruiting process.
Well, first and foremost, and this is not a knock at my high school coaches. My high school coaches were phenomenal. I mean, to have two guys that were very different, and those are guys who not only shaped me as a player, but shaped me as a person, more importantly. However, the landscape has changed in terms of just how early recruitment starts and how you have to advocate for your players. So one thing that we wanted to do right off is let our families know that we're going to advocate for your son right away. Now, again, they have to earn that, right? I don't believe in, kids getting anything because that'll hurt them later on in life. But to take over that the recruiting side of it, a lot of times what happens now and really across the board, especially in a sport like baseball, where, these showcases is where a lot of these guys are getting scholarships. So now they get back to their high school team and they're almost looking like, well, why do I need you? And, you look at basketball and the AAU coaches and, God bless them. They, a lot of them do a great job. But oftentimes for, the struggle is, sometimes AAU might seem more valuable than high school to some degree if you allow, you know, that to lead the charge in terms of that recruiting. So for us from day one, you know, we basically said we're going to control that part. And we were reaching out to colleges and using our resources and building those relationships. So, you know, their recruitment really started with us. And that that certainly has helped our program a ton in terms of trust and you know, believing in us and what we think. And, you know, we study colleges. You know, we let our guys know, hey, you know, I've watched this coach. You would fit in this system. You know, this is who they're recruiting. You know, our parents would come to us for information like, hey, this school just offered this guy last night or they just offered him today. So our parents really lean on us heavily and colleges know that. And so they're while they're definitely, you know, working on building a relationship with, you know, our players and our families, they're working almost as hard to make sure that they earn our trust as well.
I think that's really important when you talk about that relationship between you as a high school coach and those college coaches and being able to know and understand going both ways that each side can trust the other, where the college coach can trust that you're going to give an honest evaluation of your player. And obviously you're going to sell your player, but at the same time, you can't sell the college on who this player is or who this kid is too many times and not have it be true before those college coaches don't trust you anymore. So you obviously have to sell them, but at the same time, you have to be honest. So I think that's what the college coaches are expecting from you as a high school coach. And then conversely, you as a high school coach have to be able to trust that the staff that you're going to send your player to, that they're going to do what's in the best interest of that player. They're going to develop them both as a basketball player, but also as a student, that it's the right fit and that those college coaches are being honest when they come in and they talk to you and they talk to their player. And so to me, I guess that's a process that has to go on over time, and you build that and you get to know staffs and they get to know you. And eventually you get to the point where you feel comfortable where, hey, if this staff is ever recruiting one of my players, I'm going to feel totally on board with being able to recommend, hey, this is a great place for you. These guys have your best interest at heart. And conversely, college coaches are going to come to you and be able to trust you that you're going to tell them the truth about your players.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I always tell, you know, my guys like, hey, you know, I have to tell the truth, because if I don't, that's going to hurt the guy coming after you. So, you know, I'm always going to be honest. You know, I'm definitely going to advocate for you, but I have to be honest in what I see every day from your character, from your work ethic, your academic standing. You know, I check their grades every week. So I'm always all over that part. But I've definitely you know, build a lot of relationships with coaches and, you know, really me and my brother, and they trust us. And it's been great to see those relationships evolve over time. And, you know, just the reinforcement of colleges saying, hey, you know, you guys are doing it the right way. And that's really humbling.
What about the relationship with AAU coaches there in the Chicago area when you're trying to figure out and help your players navigate that whole system and make sure you get them to programs and coaches that are going to do right by them in terms of getting them exposure, but also just the experience that they're going to have from a basketball standpoint, being coached and being in an environment that's at least semi-structured so that you know you're putting them in the right, you know, you're putting them in the right program with the right AAU coaches. What's that process look like for you?
Well, I might be unpopular in this, but I don't like AAU, but it's a necessary evil. Almost. So, you know, for us, you know, I honestly, we try not to get too involved. You know, it's more so if a family comes to us and say, hey, what do you recommend? There are certain AU programs that we feel very strongly about in terms of, you know, what they stand for and what they represent. You know, it's important for us, you know, we understand that, you know, the type of coaching may not always be exactly what they're going to, you know, get at St. Rita, but, you know, for us, it's you know, the role models they're around and, you know, the environment. And we definitely want them to be in a professional environment where, you know, that program is viewed in a positive light with college coaches. That winning is important and not just a showcase of yourself, so to speak, that you're, you know, they're instilling the right values in you that's consistent with what we teach. So we do help, you know, especially if someone comes to us and if we feel like, you know, all right, you need to get out of this program, we will intervene if needed. But we definitely have a great rapport with some well-respected AU programs here in Chicago, for sure. So,
what's the relationship like coaching with your brother?
There's good and I won't say bad. There's good. How about there's good and challenges?
That's a great way to put it. Definitely challenges, especially, you know, him being the older brother. You know?
Right.
It's definitely a challenge. We butt heads. There's no doubt about it. But we're actually the perfect combination, to be honest. I'm probably more level and even keel, and he's very spirited. but it's a nice balance. It's a nice balance for us and for everything I don't see, he sees, and vice versa. And ultimately, you know, the one thing I learned from, you know, Steve Schaefer and coaching in college is, in order for you to have a successful program, you have to, you know, obviously, one, you have to have a supportive administration, but two, your staff has to be a staff that you trust. So even to the point of, you'd rather have someone that you trust than maybe someone with more knowledge. And that's how we've, you know, really tailored our staff. And it just so happens that we're fortunate to have an experienced staff who does know what they're doing. From, again, my brother, Division I basketball player, coaching at EYBL, been coaching for, you know, a long time, Bill Judge, state champion, actually coached my brother. I've been knowing him since I was, you know, a little guy, you know, Emmanuel Crosby, who I played in high school and in college with. Issa Avery, you know, played in college with. Dallas Haywood, I actually coached him in college at Fontenby University. So we really have a family dynamic on our staff where, you know, they'll get on me where they need to. And I listen to them, you know, I trust those guys. So it's easy when everyone's pulling in the same direction.
How do you make sure that everybody's on the same page? What do the discussions look like behind closed doors in the coach's office? And how do you make sure that when you're talking about the lower levels of your program, so you're talking about your freshman team, you're talking about your JV, your sophomore team, making sure that they're teaching the things that you know that your players are going to need when they get up to you on the varsity level? Just what's your philosophy as a head coach of sort of delegating that out? Or how do you make sure that they're teaching the concepts the way that you want them taught?
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, first and foremost, our goals never change. So, you know, number one is, you know, we want to help them grow as men. You know, that's, you know, being a better brother, being a better son, a better student, you know, being a positive, you know, influence on the community. So that is first and foremost. You know, second is definitely, you know, their academics. We check the entire program every week. And if we don't like what we see, we either motivate them with sprints or we'll get them help. But however we need to do it, we're going to get that done. And then, you know, the third aspect is that's where the basketball comes in. And there are drills that we do as a program that we teach through and through. Just to name a few, you know, we work on wall ups. You know, everyone thinks they're a shot blocker and they're not. So definitely drill, you know, contesting shots without fouling, you know, stepping through traps, squaring up when you catch the ball, not just putting it on the floor right away. So there are drills that we kind of do universal throughout the program. Then obviously we'll expand some things, you know, at each level as these guys get older.
How do you guys structure your practice? Are you guys varsity practicing by yourself? The JVs sometimes practice with you guys. How do you break that down?
So normally, you know, everyone kind of practice on their own, but sometimes, you know, we might mix in freshmen and sophomores. Varsity, you know, is usually by themselves, just kind of just due to physicality alone, just
right.
The caliber of guys we have, you know, we try to keep those guys,
right, I understand,
you know, with each other. But, you know, definitely not afraid to mix it in, you know, here or there, you know, when it makes sense for us. But in terms of, you know, a typical varsity practice, you know, I think, you know, as coaches, you know, and it's always a peeve of mine, especially at the grade school level, is, you know, you have to find a balance at our level between, obviously, you want to win and you want to be competitive, but you have to make sure these guys are getting better. So, you know, one thing that, you know, I've been on myself about, my staff about, and we have to continue to improve on this because I always, you know, while I think we do a fairly, you know, good job, you know, there's always room for improvement. And that's how much time are we emphasizing skill development and practice? Because, you know, you only have the gym for so much time. So, you got to make sure everyone's on the same page defensively. You got to make sure everyone knows what the offense or the play calling or what our game plan is for this specific game. But at the same time, we'd be doing these guys a disservice if we're not doing some form of skill work day in and day out. So that's something that's really important to us as a staff, that, you know, we want these guys to continue to hone in on their skills while we're trying to compete as a team and win at a high level.
What does that practice planning process look like for you? Is that something where you're sitting down by yourself and putting together the practice plan and then sharing it with the staff? Is that something that you guys do together? Just how do you go about putting together that daily practice plan?
So actually, usually by myself, but what happens is, again, because my coaches are so dedicated and, you know, again, you're only as strong as the support around you. So there'll be times, it's almost like they're reading my mind. So there'll be times where I'm working on a practice plan and I'll get like five texts individually, like, hey, we got to remember, we got to go over this today, or we need to do this, or hey, man, we got to get some shots, or our free throws were terrible. Make time for free throws today. So my staff is always great about, you know, reminding me of, you know, things that we need to do or suggestions they have. And, you know, one thing I always tell those guys, I want you to coach. You know, it's important that you coach. So if you have something you think we need to do, or, you know, a drill, maybe a different drill to, you know, make practice exciting, or, you know, whatever the case may be, don't hesitate to let me know. So, again, a lot of times it's kind of more about myself, but again, I'm always getting feedback from my staff.
Do you have a standard structure / order that you like to go in where, hey, we always work on defense first and then offense, or skill development's always at the end, or just how do you organize a daily practice?
I would say as the season goes on, it changes. So week one, and it's all about your identity and what you want to be, right? So week one, it's a no-brainer. They already know defensive rebounding, toughness, diving, taking charges. It's going to be brutal, and it has to be, because, you know, that's what I want my team to be, a reflection of who we are and what we stand for. And I want, you know, our passion to show through them for St. Rita and what their jersey means. So week one is definitely really tough. And, you know, kind of as we go on, and, you know, especially as the season goes on and we get into games, maybe we try to fine tune the offense. You know, I always feel like, you know, the offense will evolve over the season, but it's really important that we come out with a certain intensity on the defensive side of the ball, that we communicate in a certain way, that when the ball's on the ground, we're laying out completely forward. You know, the offense, you know, those are things that you can fine tune as the season goes on.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that different coaches have different philosophies about how they like to put their practice plan. You have some coaches who every day you want the sort of same structure, so you have this going to that, and then you have other coaches who want to do it a little bit differently and mix it up and keep it fresh. And I think you have to coach to your personality ultimately and figure out what process works the best for you. And once you do that, then you end up getting the most out of your practice minutes. Because as you said, no matter where you are, you got limited time on the floor. Your players have limited attention spans and how much time that they can put it on the floor before it starts being diminishing return. So how far along into your head coaching career was it before you felt like you had a good handle on sort of what your philosophy was? And you could take philosophy of maybe the overall program, philosophy offensively and defensively, what you wanted to do. Was that something that you felt like when you first took the job there at St. Rita's that, okay, I kind of, through my experience here as an assistant and being a college assistant, that you already felt like you kind of had established your philosophy? Or do you feel like it took a year or two as a head coach to kind of figure your way around it till you felt comfortable with, hey, this is really who I am as a coach, as a head coach, and what I want to do with my program?
Honestly, I really do feel like I was prepared for that moment in terms of my philosophy. Again, I just have to thank St. Rita for, you know, believing in me to run our athletic programs as director of athletics. So when I took over, I knew philosophy-wise, what I wanted to do and what I wanted it to look like. For me, I think it's more of seeing the things you believe in work and staying with them when it doesn't seem like it is. So even to this day, you know, any coach, you know, at least for me anyway, you know, you're going to doubt things sometimes. I'm my own worst critic. You know, I can win a game and I'll just, you know, brutally, you know, like, why did you do that? This was a horrible play. Why, you know? So I'm always critiquing myself through a win or a loss, or after practice, like, maybe I should do this different. I should communicate this a certain way. But I definitely stick to my principles and what I believe in. And again, from day one, from a philosophy standpoint, I 100% felt prepared. You know, again, it's more of just that day-to-day grind and staying with it, I think, can be the most challenging part, especially when, you know, you're hitting some adversity.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a ton of sense. I think when you get, I think when you feel like you have that confidence, right, that you've seen success, you've seen that what you've done and are doing is allowing you to have success on the floor, and you're also having success impacting your young people off the floor, and you're checking in on them as students and keeping tabs on what they're doing. I think if you can establish that philosophy and really make sure that you're buying into it and that you have confidence in it, and then you can pass that confidence along to your coaching staff and then ultimately down to your players. And then that's what leads to the type of success that you've been able to have there at St. Rita. We're coming up towards an hour and a half, Roshan. I want to ask you one final two-part question before we finish up. So first part of the question is, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what do you see as being your biggest challenge? And then the second part is, when you get up every morning, you think about what you get to do as the head boys basketball coach there at St. Rita High School, what brings you the most joy in what you get to do day in and day out? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
I would say the biggest challenge is just really outside noise. You know, it's humbling that, you know, whether it's good or bad, people want to talk about St. Rita basketball. So, you know, that it's humbling. And, you know, I'm a little weird. I'm motivated by the negative comments personally. But, you know, I'm an adult at the end of the day. It's more about, you know, these kids. And, you know, sometimes I feel like it's too much, whether it be too much praise or, you know, the way certain people want to talk about, you know, the program or these kids that are playing. It's like, hey, at the end of the day, these are 15, 16, 17-year-old kids. It's not that serious. So really just, you know, getting my team to just focus on, you know, what we're preaching, leaning on each other, understanding the big picture of what sacrifice means for the greater good. So the biggest challenge definitely is just all the noise that comes with playing today. Just where we are as a society. So that's certainly the biggest challenge. Outside of that, you know, in terms of what we do, what we're about, the caliber of character that's on our team, that's easy. And thankful to my parents for raising great young men and trusting our staff. That's the easy part. But it's everyone else that has an opinion that makes it complicated sometimes. And then really what I'm looking forward to the most, honestly, is just watching them just grow up, you know, and enjoy this process, you know, to watch them sign on the dotted line on what college they're going to, and, you know, watching them, you know, win big games and, you know, and hopefully win something big enough that they can, you know, always come back and point up in the rafters and say, hey, look what we accomplished as a team. But, you know, just them being at their best, you know, whether that's, you know, 3.0 in the classroom. You know, we've been fortunate to have an average of a 3.5 GPA since I've been a coach, which is incredible. I'm so, you know, as happy as I am about our national ranking, I'm happier about the GPA, to be honest with you. So, you know, just these guys, you know, reaching their goals and just, you know, accomplishing, you know, seeing their hard work pay off. I can know a greater satisfaction than that. You know, I don't coach for myself. I coach for these guys and I want them to play on a big stage and play against the best. And, you know, I'm just really excited for them. You know, this opportunity that they have at St. Rita to, you know, potentially be the greatest team that's ever been there and to have the program where it's at right now. I couldn't be more excited for these guys. So truly, truly blessed to be in a position I'm in. And I'm just thankful. I'm thankful for the guys that I get to coach every day.
Yeah, it's fun and exciting, and you got a lot to look forward to. I know this season, I think it's well said that you're going to get to have an impact and hopefully put together the best team that you've ever had there at St. Rita. And as we talked about earlier, just the ability to do that at your alma mater and to be able to share that with your guys and know that at one point you were sitting in the same chair that they're sitting in now, I think has to bring even more satisfaction to the whole process, as you talked about earlier. Before we get out, Roshan, I want to give you a chance to share how people can find out more about you and your program, whether you want to share social media, website, whatever you feel comfortable with, and then I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
No, I really appreciate that. Yeah, so if you want to follow our program, our Instagram and Twitter is under the same name as S Rita Basketball. So please follow us. It's definitely going to be a fun season. We'll definitely have highlights and scores and our schedule. So please follow us. This is really an exciting group with high character guys. So it's going to be a fun season. And any information on our school, you can always visit www.stritahs.com. Definitely the best all-male school in Chicago. I know I'm biased, but come check it out for yourself. It's a great place.
Well, Sean, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule tonight to jump on with us. It's been a pleasure getting to know you, getting to learn more about your program. Wish you nothing but the best of luck this season and in the coming years. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.